This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 221, Close Cannon Quarters. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Larry Nemechek. In this episode, we'll be talking about the slew of new Star Trek content headed our way, from PyCon Discovery to Picard post-Supernova, with comedy, animation, and more in between, as the franchise might just be entering another golden age. So let's step into the Ready Room. Well, hello, Larry. It seems that every time I wander into my ready room, which is not as often as I would like, you're still in here. I guess this is Portal 14 headquarters, 3347. What's going on here?
Well, I'm sorry there, Sonny. It's I think you have me mistaken for someone else.
Are you Boothby?
They cut down my tree at the academy. Did I tell you that?
Actually, they really did. Oh, hi, Chris. Why do we always engage in this cutesiness? Because it sells. Boy, does it sell these podcasts. That's why we do the cutesy.
And that moment when Boothby's tree gets cut down, that's going to be a killer scene in the new Picard series.
That is. Well, if they can go out and actually film it at Tilman, at the Japanese Garden, they could like CG in the original tree and then... and then show it there. No, they seriously did. The tree got too big. But, you know, that was filmed like, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
I could see them doing something these days. Like, it would be a real tree, but like portions of the bark would be covered in green cloth so they could put some kind of CG in there, but still have a partially real piece.
Oh, CG tree. Oh, CG tree. How? Okay.
We're a little late for that. It's January now.
I guess so. Okay.
All right. So anyway, it's been a while since we recorded a Ready Room, and there has been a lot of Star Trek news. So it seemed like a good time for us to get back together and share our thoughts on the news. I have really not shared my thoughts anywhere on much of any of this. So,
well, I get a little chance every week on my Trekland Tuesdays Live on my Facebook. But you know what happened this week was I did it on Tuesday, and then I swear to God, 2 hours later, the first of the news hit, and then the next day it was all day long. So I'm like, okay, fine. So I feel very fresh.
That's how it goes, right?
I feel very fresh here with you. Yeah.
Well, as people who follow me on Twitter probably know, my work schedule is really insane these days, and I don't have as much time as I did in the past to really think about Star Trek. So today's episode could be a revelation for me as I find out how I feel about some of these future Trek projects, and that's going to be the focus of the Ready Room today. We're going to talk about the future Treks, the shows that are coming up or maybe coming up this year, next year, and I don't know, maybe beyond. Who knows? We'll see where it goes.
No, and beyond was in 2016, Chris. Yeah.
That's right. Okay. So let's start, Larry, with Discovery Season 2, because that's what we're about to get. And depending on how quickly I can edit what we're recording right now, it may have premiered before this episode drops because it's January 17th, correct?
It is. It's my early birthday present this year. That's what I'm claiming anyway. But, oh, I hope you get this edited before then because...
I hope so.
Yeah.
Okay, so Discovery Season 2, there's been a lot of promotion of it. There are a lot of posters flying around on Twitter and
Huge
online.
Huge blitz, yes.
There's been a lot of trailers put out there, some of which those of us outside the U.S. haven't been able to see because for some unknown reason, given that Discovery does come on Netflix outside the U.S., for some reason, these things are still geo-blocked. So when they go by you on Twitter, for a split second, you can see the image and then it turns black and it says, this content is not available in your region.
Because it's not coming from Netflix proper, I guess. So everybody around the world in that 185 country Netflix region needs to do a GoFundMe to come up with $500,000 to pay for just bringing those same, don't even produce a new one, just bring
now, these are
the
actually
all access over.
The ones I'm talking about are the ones that are being tweeted out by the official Star Trek Discovery account, the Star Trek CBS account. So why not make this stuff viewable globally? Why is it geo-restricted? I don't want to talk about it right now, but that is happening still. And as you know, and as those who have listened to me for years know, it frustrates me a lot. So the point being there is that I have seen some trailers for Discovery Season 2, but there are others that I haven't seen. So,
well, aside from the trailers, which yes, CBS has been pumping out, All Access has been pumping out. There's been a big press blitz, especially this week. And Alex Kurtzman has been talking to all the major trade and media papers and did a sit down at CES in Vegas. There's a half hour video interview, which after I saw a couple of fan and media sites have it, then CBS posted a clear view of it. So it's like a half hour of, and it's the longest extended discussion. The interviewer was a little flip at times. There was a couple of times I always felt like he was kind of like wanting to hurry him along. I guess he was trying to cram in his questions. Anyway, I would have loved to have had that seat, but it was actually, I think, the longest extended time I can remember seeing Alex Kurtzman going through all these questions, and things were not, there weren't softballs. They touched on a lot of different things, fan reactions, and you could tell he was being pretty sincere and not reaching for an answer, but actually digging down to come up with something, and a couple of times surprised a little bit. I saw some of the same themes in some of the direct print interviews elsewhere, but he had some good points, and it was revealing. And I've had a good vibe. Here's the thing, Chris. All the things that I've been saying just on gut reaction to the reality that I can see and the whispers that I hear and the few people that I've talked to, but mainly just knowing how things would work in human nature. And almost everything has been verified.
Okay.
Everything has kind of gone the way I thought, much to the chagrin, I'm sure, of all the clickbait YouTube, the other fake doctors out there and all these other personalities of the YouTubers that don't like revealing their face or their names, but who come up with the doomsday scenarios. And I don't mean the Commodore Decker
Well,
ones.
That's what sells, Larry, unfortunately, these days for many people. Yeah. So they do it.
And short memories of those buyers that don't realize that 6 months ago it was all crap and still they listen. But yeah.
Right. Well, let's talk about Season 2 and what they're going to do.
Yeah, those details.
I will say that my initial reaction when I saw that they were going to bring Captain Pike on was a little bit like, oh, really? Are you going to do that? The people who don't like Discovery are really going to be set off by such an obvious attempt to connect Discovery with the original series by using Pike as a bridge. But from what I've seen since then, the costume design, the portrayal of Pike that I've seen in the trailers, and the overall story, it feels like they're doing it with care and they're creating a nice bridge that I think is going to be interesting to watch. I think it's going to make sense. I think that if you roll all the way back to all of the fury over the costume design before Discovery launched and what are they doing with these blue uniforms? Mm-hmm. And the writers said at the time, like, don't worry, we're going to bridge this. We're going to transition. Maybe all of this was in the planning from the beginning. I don't know. Maybe they came up with it later, this sort of mix, having Pike and the gold coming in. But what they're doing looks really nice. And I think ultimately what we're going to get out of this is a nice connection that will ultimately bring Discovery more into what Trek fans feel is like the mainstream of the timeline, that it will lead into the original series. Mm-hmm. How do you feel?
Well, as I've said many times, the first year of Discovery is hardly this intact, let's sit down, draw up a blueprint, and then build it exactly like that. I mean, you know, it evolved.
Right.
It had such chaos in the birthing and changed directions. And the folks who wound up flying the plane at the end of the flight, they're the ones, well, we've had changeover even since then. But for the most part, that vision is what's guiding and going forward now. And there are lots of, from Kirsten Beyer and Erica Lippold and Bowie Kim and a lot of folks involved. Alex Kurtzman, even back to his days, would talk about, you know, he was a next-gen fan onward. Mm-hmm. For the naysayers in there, there are a lot of things going on. I mean, Brian Fuller was a huge fan, but Brian Fuller also liked to add his own ruffles and flourishes. Mm-hmm. And that'll be a 4-year semester case of future history to get into that as the time goes by. But I, you know, as you saw where, as I would hear a few of the frustrations and attempted fixes as the year went along, but you could just tell by watching the screen, the tone shift and the tone change. But people that were given the marching orders to finish up the season from a fourth of the way in and a third of the way in, got it to a place where I felt good about going into the next year. Now, the Enterprise appearing and the Pike are all great little... If that had been the end of the series, you would have gone, ooh, that was a cool little ending spot. But in the real world now, it's like, okay, that was cool for 5 seconds, but what does it mean? And is this going to be, like you said, is it going to be, you know, stunt casting or stunt writing? You know, or what's this actually going to mean in the real world of the real storytelling? Is this suddenly going to turn into the Pike and Spock show? You know, or the, you know, are we going to graft the old Enterprise onto this ship and it won't be Burnham and Saru's show anymore? What's going to be the personality going forward? Mm-hmm. And I went from thinking, well, Pike will be in there for 2 or 3 episodes. Well, now he's the season arc as a bridge into, and then to what Alex, back to what Alex is saying now, he says what this has turned into the season is, you've taken one of the questions of the first year, the fan reaction revolt of, what the hell is this? Michael Burnham being a, you know, they keep saying Steph and half sister. She's a foster sister, a foster daughter to Sarek, not a half, not a step. She's a foster. She was adopted from as an orphan. Okay. You take that rage question of, we never heard about this. We never saw this. And you know, one of my hashtag sayings is texture, not trivia. That's exactly what Kurtzman says he's doing. Alex says he's saying exactly Spock in 50 years of us watching him, you know, never mentioned his foster sister, Michael. Why is that? And now he's saying season 2 will be the why did he never mention her? And that the irony of this, you know, 7 lights, red angel, red matter angel, whatever the hell's going on. I'm just being facetious there, maybe. But the crux of the matter is the ship crew as a family has to come together now that they've quasi gotten settled down, weeded out all their mirror and Section 31 people and whatever, supposedly. For the most part, anyway. And on a macro level, it's the crew as a family. On a micro level, it's Spock and Michael, that there are fissures between them, but they have to come together to solve the dilemma of this mission. But at the end, we know that they wind up, from what it sounds like, Spock never mentioned her. We know why in the real world, because the shows are written out of order and new things are created. But they're determined to come up with a reason that satisfies us as to why exactly Spock never mentioned her. I'd be thrilled if somewhere along this season, in the middle of them fighting, that Cybok's name gets brought up. Now, that would really throw people's hat in the creek. knock people's hat in the creek, I should say. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like there was one moment in season one where you realize the one thing that I thought they really, that made me go, oh my God, that actually added something to 53 years of Trek, was where you realize that it wasn't just that Spock turned down Sarek when he turned down the Vulcan Science Council to go to Starfleet. It was that Sarek had tried to get Michael into the academy and they wouldn't take her.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like he wasted both of his chances with his kids, getting them into the revered academy, Vulcan Science Academy. And I was like, wow. So it's like a double whammy on him for being manipulative, and he's been rejected from different directions both times. So he's carrying that around. Anyway.
Yeah.
And add some. So, so apparently this is going to be a season-long arc. We should move on down our list here, but that's Anson Mount has embraced it. He looks like Jeffrey Hunter. People, you know, I think that was a definite. I think every step that's been taken, pretty much, with a couple of exceptions, we can laugh at them here in a minute. But I think they have been very sure-footed this year about when they've had these revelations and these leaks and these little promo teases to lead into this season. That they've been spot on and hit the nail on the head. And I think casting Anson Mount and the way they rolled him out and everything and his appearances at cons already, everything has been striking really good notes. And he's showed his, whether it was, and I haven't seen whether he was a kid or whether he's picked up his fan cred in the last year or two and done insane research, but he gets it. He went to meet Jeffrey Hunter's son. And they did all those. Mm-hmm. You know, like Ethan Peck went to see Adam and Julie Nimoy and their families. They've been doing all the right touches, but
yeah.
So yeah.
So let's keep going, because this is going to premiere in a few days and we'll find out how it goes. And
right.
We have a lot of other projects that we can talk about here that people probably want to hear about. But yeah, I think it'll be very interesting. And I think that I don't think it's going to become the Pike and Spock show. But I think that they are going to be key to the story, and it is going to move us closer. And I kind of feel like if Discovery goes 4, 5, 6 seasons, we'll probably look back at the entire first season as a bit of a prologue to what the actual Discovery show is.
Yes.
Because at the end of that first season, the Enterprise shows up. Start of season 2, we've got Pike there. And we'll just keep moving our way towards the familiar years.
Are you saying, Chris, that in 5 or 10 years, fans will be just saying, when the next generation comes along that says, okay, I'm going to start watching Star Trek shows. Do I have to watch the whole thing? And a new generation will say, okay, Discovery, just skip the first year.
Skip the first year.
Just start watching it too. Yeah. Hopefully they won't be third season, which is what people say with a lot of the series, but yeah.
I would also remind fans that fans complain about the first season of almost all the series.
That's what I'm getting.
Everyone talks about how terrible The Next Generation is in the first year. DS9 in its first year is certainly not firing on all cylinders. There are good stories in there, but it's not the show that it becomes. Voyager is not bad in its first season, but again, it's not the show that it becomes. I think the only series that has a truly great first season is the original series.
And thank God for that.
In which the first season is probably the strongest of the three, right? There's so many.
I love the second season best of all, but I just think of it, it's more, the format's matured more in the second season.
Yeah, but the stories in the first season, so many of the stories that people think of as being those great original series stories fall within that first season.
Okay, we'll have to talk about that someday.
Yeah.
We haven't, in 8 years, we haven't talked about this, but yeah.
Yeah, I guess we haven't, really, have we?
We should do that.
All right. The one other thing I want to mention about Discovery before we move on from that is Wilson Cruz tweeted the other day, it really cracked me up. You know, they've been tweeting out these posters where they've got two of the crew members standing back to back.
Right.
And there's the poster of him and I think that poster is him and Stamets. It could be him and someone else, but I'm pretty sure it's Culbert and Stamets.
Culbert in the flesh with Stamets.
Right. And Wilson Cruz tweeted, come on, people. This is not a direct quote, but it's like, come on, people. Are you really going to ask me after a promotional poster with me in my uniform. Are you still going to ask me if I'm coming back in season two? He says, you're killing me. Killing me, I tell you. But I love you. But I'm thinking, like, what more information do fans need to know that Culber is coming back?
Yes.
In all the promotions in his uniform.
Of course, what he can't say is that all through the second season, when he's in his off hours, Stamets goes back to his quarters and just watches old home movies of the two of them together.
Right. And so he's not really so in. It's see, just yeah. old home videos.
But they have to shoot new footage because they didn't shoot it all at the beginning. So it's all just, you know, it's like old home movies so he can be depressed and drink himself into a stupor. And oh, no, wait, that's
there are also
what's
a lot of photos of him in those photo albums. That,
right.
That
with, you know, 23rd Century Hollow, you know, Pink Ray, 5K, whatever the hell it is by then, hollow
so,
versions. Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad that he's coming back. I'm curious to see what the explanation is for how he comes back, or if they even give one. You know, they might just not even bother with it.
And real quick, we'll see. Spock, I have to say, what happened 6 months ago, 10% of the, and I'll be fair, 10% of the internet melted down hating the Spock beard, right? And I said at the time, come on, guys. He's obviously been out of commission. He's either been unconscious or where he didn't have, you know, an old-fashioned razor or a fancy-dancy little Culber and Stamets, you know, bathroom matching set razor, you know, hollow sonic razor or something. Yeah. He's obviously out of it. So, and what's happened? Voila, we've seen clips of him looking like he's in a psych ward when they find him and liberate him, whatever. So I just want to say, stop and think, folks, before you like have a cow about something that pops up. You see one image, you see one still. For one thing, that's the image or still that CBS picked to show you.
They want you to see
Got you
right?
talking. There go the Parrot Analytics online points.
But also, about adding texture to the universe. This could be the inspiration for Bones leading into the motion picture when he grew out his big beard.
Disco Bones, as it's been.
Disco Bones.
As it's been retcon headcanon.
Maybe Spock told him, you remember, you've seen those photos of me from before I was on the ship with Pike? You should do that. It's very liberating.
Why, Doctor, you would look good in a beard. And now I'm out of here. So long, folks. Yeah. I'm off to Mount Saleh, or I'm off to the Plain of Gaul. Yes, Chris, that's your headcanon. You can stick with it. No, I just laugh at these things. But, you know, again, Alex Kurtzman pointed this out, which is true. People look at this like Discovery. Oh, it's only 10 years before Kirk. Why so close to Kirk? Well, you know, a month, a year is a yawning chasm. It wasn't my first choice of a time to set stories in if you wanted more elbow room. But if you're going to have writers that see close canon quarters, ooh, there's a phrase, close canon quarters as a benefit, which I praised one week on TTL, Michael Chabon for saying that. It's the first time I'd seen a writer go, I love it. Look at all the things that are hinted at in canon. Now take one and run with it. I'm like, yes, that's all I've ever said. That's what the novel writers do. Our friends that are the authors do. But you've got enough of a writer's room now who are fans, and Kirsten Byers in there, Kirsten, who apparently had a hand in, was in the think tank that came up with the Picard show background and helped steer it. So we'll see how that goes. And we'll talk about that in a second. But I'm saying people who see canon as a wonderful opportunity and a spring for a mind spring for ideas, not an anchor around the neck that's going to weigh them down and be a boundary limit. And to look at these years, on one hand, oh, it's so close to Kirk years. This is uncomfortably close to go off and do what you want to do with writing. But a decade between The Cage and Where No Man's Gone Before is a yawning chasm. And Alex Kurtzman this week was talking about how did the Spock of The Cage get to the Spock of Where No Man? Mm-hmm. What turned there? He's yelling Spock. He's 10% yelling Spock in Where No Man.
That's Spock Bob Shouty Pants, Larry. That's what we call
him. Oh, sorry.
Here.
Okay. You need
check the circuit.
Oh, check the circuit. I had that reserved as a URL. Yeah. The first line. Oh, yeah. Check the circuit. You have to say it right, Chris. But yes. Yeah. So it's like there's a sea change in Spock. Now they've added this layer about why does he not talk about Michael? That's cool. But, you know, and this whole thing about he and his dad did not speak for 18 years. I mean, Sarek is a character in Discovery. I hope they haven't let Frame, the actor, out to sea this whole time on the episodes with Spock. But he says he hasn't seen his father in, what is it, 18 years by the time of Journey to Babel, 14 or 18 years. So that'll be interesting to see play out. Is Michael the intermediary between the two? I mean, you know, the family dynamic. But rather than and Alex keeps saying it's 10 years before Kirk arrives. We're really down to like 7 or 8 years now. So I wish that's one thing I wish he would adjust.
Yeah.
But it can be a yawning chasm of opportunity, not too close for comfort as far as the storytelling goes. And I'm totally with him. There's, you know, increment, and people are young. These characters are all young, and how they, I just hope that we get to flesh out. I just hope Discovery's personality, is allowed to bloom on its own here. And again, it won't be the Kirk and Spock show and the Pike and Spock show, but even beyond Saru and Michael and Tilly and Stamets, I hope, you know, that bridge crew gets some identity. I just hope they get to pay attention to the rest of them, and hopefully they will.
I think they will.
They did add an hour. They've got 14 now, not 13. So.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, let's go on to Short Treks, which I just want to talk about briefly because of its connection to Discovery, but also its connection to what we'll talk about after that, which is Star Trek Picard, whatever that's going to be called. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like they're going to start doing these Short Treks in between series, not just seasons of Discovery, but the various different Star Trek series that we're going to get. In between, when there's nothing running, we'll have Short Treks to hold us over. And I have finally been able to see all four of them. And I really like the format. I am, of course, a big fan of science fiction in general, science fiction literature. My love of science fiction literature is actually what gave birth to Trek FM as a network in the first place. And within SF literature, the short story is my favorite format because you can tell a lot in limited space. As a reader, it's a lot easier for you to consume. And also, I think as a writer, it does make you focus more on telling a tight story. And as I watch these short treks, I feel that they succeeded in doing that. The first one was Runaway. It was interesting,
predictable,
but
predictable as to its what the scope of it was. Is what I mean, not so much the story, maybe, but
yeah. And Calypso was very interesting because it was very much like a science fiction short story,
completely out,
not really like a Star Trek story.
Exactly.
It was just an SF short story. The Brightest Star was quite good because of the background it gave us about Saru. I think that's very important information for us to know. And it really changes how you look at his character, knowing that that's how he got into Starfleet, because I don't think it was ever mentioned before that the Kelpians were not spacefaring at the time.
It was pretty vague, right? It wasn't even mentioned that Kelpians were like Federation members or protectorates or anything. I mean, none of the status was. I mean, I got into that with the Stellar Cartography update. There was like nothing to go on.
Mm-hmm. So that one was quite interesting. The weakest of the four for me was actually the Harry Mudd episode, The Escape Artist. The ending was fun. I liked the ending when we find out. Hopefully anyone who is listening to this has seen it. Spoiler alert if you haven't.
It has an ending. Spoiler alert.
Obviously, given the history of Harry Mudd in the original series, it was a clever, if not obvious, twist to have him be a bunch of androids, you know.
Well, we're not doing a whole hour on this one short trek, but it really got some, as much as I enjoyed the Escape Artist, the Harry Mudd short trek, I was almost guilty because my mind immediately went into background and chronology. And I won't spoil anymore if you hadn't seen it yet. But I immediately was trying. I mean, I knew at least where it happened, at least the minimum time it happened. But the whole thing with the major focus of the show, right? The artificial life forms that are the focus of the show. It's like, where did that fit in vis-a-vis everything we know, especially from iMud? I mean, I think it obviously is before that. I mean, for one thing, Harry put, if we're going to be visually literal, then Harry's put on some weight and he's gotten a little balder over the years and things like that. But it got me thinking about how, what are the two android, pre-Data and Soong? Well, throw Soong in the Soong type androids in. Every time we've had androids, and I'm going to say Roger Corby and then the Mud Planet androids, and then Data and the Soong family. Where did they come from? It was somebody or some civilization off on its own in a deep, dark cellar corner somewhere where the rest of the galaxy has no idea what's going on. They're aware of, they have a word, android. But all these major dramatic props of stories have all been done in the closet and somebody stumbles into them, right? We stumble into all three major android systems we've ever known about. So, if you're trying to figure out where to peg Harry Mudd here, I finally said, well, you know what? He's just stumbled into another. I was like, well, if he's got this sophisticated a factory going on, why was Corby such a big deal? Why was it such a big deal, the planet? I mean, they were all one-offs that were found and discovered and, you know, later on. So, you know, that's my little bit of canon smoothing there. But I had to go through that. And then I even had a little guilt because I enjoyed the show. It's like, oh, Larry, why do you have to let go here? It's like, well, because it, but now I can enjoy it more. I've made peace with it and thought it was fun, and you know. But it brought up a revelation. Every mention of androids, really, and Flint even with Raina, also Requiem for Thuzla. It's some guy off on his own doing his own thing in his little lab in his little dark corner somewhere that the rest of the galaxy has no idea. The rest of the quadrant has no idea about till you stumble into it. So it's almost like forget youth, you know, eugenics being banned. It's like android experimentation has been banned, and you have to run off and go, you know, rent a little deep dark lab and not tell anybody what you're doing, or the zoning laws will get you or something. I don't know.
Anyway. This area is not zoned for android production.
This area is not.
I see.
Right. There's your title there. There's your android zoning pants.
But the ending of that one, I enjoyed. I found most of that episode to be kind of meandering until we finally got to the revelation. But the format of Short Treks, I like a lot. And I guess my question for you would be, what do you think they might be able to do with this format beyond what they've done? Because three of these four were really directly connected with Discovery, even though the show isn't called Discovery Shorts.
And it's, they make a big point of that in the titles.
Short Treks.
Yes.
Right. It's not Discovery. But because it's on CBS All Access and it's feeding out of Discovery right now, we got three out of four. I mean, really four, because Calypso takes place on Discovery, but
yeah, only by the slimmest,
it's a Discovery
connection.
A thousand years in the future and no crews around.
Well, for starters, yes, I know Netflix world. You haven't seen them, as my overseas Portal 47 people keep reminding me, unless they wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, say no more. They do see them. But when they first announced these, the initial thought is, oh, great, how smart. They're doing this to bridge the hiatus time and create some interest, maybe, you know, create some online buzz in the shallow time here in between seasons, with this, you know, streaming season of being not 3 months like traditional TV with 26 episode seasons, but oh, it's going to be 9 months or 10 months between startups until they crank out three and four shows to series to overlap, right, on All Access. And so good. They're filling up the time. They'll keep a buzz going. And then I thought, if they're smart, they're probably testing out actors, writers, characters, even tones. And which is exactly what they did. That Michael, I'm curious to see Chicken and the Egg. Did Michael Chabon come into the fold as an old Star Trek fan, as a veteran Star Trek fan? Did he write his Short Trek Calypso and then get invited into the hashtag Picard series Ready Room, or the other way around? You know, what was it? And what was the story behind the pitch and the decision to do each one of these four? But what I was hoping was that they would, you know, try out talents before or behind the screen. What it's turned into then with the Saru show, I was really impressed by the production. You know, the bottle shows, Runaway was very much, oh, let's film on the sets with a few extras, right? A little CGI. Same thing. Calypso, a lot of CGI, a really interesting story there out of the box. And Harry Mudd, a fun one. But the brightest star, the Saru show, was really they're on location. Yeah. They've spent all this money on the look and the thought, the R&D for Kelpians and the huts and the clothing
and the makeup
and the makeup. And yeah, they, well, yeah, it was designed, but they had to pay for it. But
yeah,
even,
they had to do multiple Kelpians.
But to build all those huts that they did live and all the props and go out and film on location that way. It's like, and then I've seen since, I don't know, the, it was, they were guessing that they were back on Kaminar. There's a still in one of the promos that were produced that you haven't seen, I suppose, of Michael and Saru wearing fabric-y looking native outfits. Can't tell if it's supposed to be they've gone back to Kaminar or not. But this week, now in this avalanche of PR, the cherry on top of the sundae of all our speculation about Short Trek, A, the use that they put those two seemed to be growing. And then my final question was, I wonder if this is a one-time thing done for confidence building. And now that we're talking about three series going on, that they won't be a need for more Short Treks, or whether they see that as value. Well, A, Alex this week said, number one, you will see all these things play into Discovery somehow, whether he's being, you know, that whether that's a stretch to say, like you said, Calypso, or what that will be. But that's one thing. And A was that they're looking to do at least a couple more Short Treks and try out some animation forms, which we're going to get to here in a minute. Mm. But the fact that he kind of confirms, no, this is not the last. We're not abandoning this format, because I totally agree. It's not only focuses the writing, but it allows you something I screamed about 20 years ago. Gee, it would be great to have a Klingon series, a Cardassian series, you know, name the, you know, or a different time period series. But they would never do it because the cost. They'd have to do a whole season. You know, they wouldn't spend the money on one episode. They're not going to throw out all the 24th century backlog of sets and costumes and props. They just won't spend the landscape. The paradigm didn't fit it. This is perfect for doing that kind of thing. Now you don't have to think, oh, it was a miniseries. Can we do three episodes? And, you know, this is perfect for that. So now not only can we get a variety of storytelling, it allows them to, what a movie used to do. Oh, look, we got spacesuits on the series because we used a movie budget to build them in First Contact. Well, maybe the inverse of that is we're doing these Short Treks and we can pay for a few things that will leverage money back to our series.
Okay.
Even though spending
point.
Money has not been a problem, I don't know how much more Netflix is going to pay for it. But, you know, so it's like all the best uses of that format are really coming to the fore, and it's great, and I'm glad to see them. Not see them as a one-time, you know, startup thing.
There's so many things you can do with it. You know, we can have Leffler's shorts, which I've been waiting for a long time. And
somehow I sense a double meaning there on the word shorts.
I don't know what you're talking about, Larry, but there are so many things you could do with this format spread across Star Trek. You know, you could dip into Voyager. You could dip into DS9. You can dip into the Next Generation time period.
Could we go to time periods we have not gone to before, Chris?
We could do that.
Oh,
we
my
could
God.
Do that. And we could do places like the Vanguard Station from the novels that people love so much. You know, you could have short stories based on that that are done as shorts.
Well, you know, all the years of the Strange New World contest. I think there were 8 or 9 years of that. There was a short story contest so that it was a way that licensing and everyone found a way to do official fan fiction. It's a little bit the way they've come to a resolution on fan films. Keep them small and short, and I guess you can wrap your arms around them. But it's interesting that both the two biggest fan film series, Phase 2 New Voyages and Star Trek Continues, both utilized short films, at least in some point of their development, for different reasons. So it's, you know, and then, like you said, short stories. It's a great thing. And again, even if it's in small doses, it may get the foot in the door conceptually or budget-wise, so to speak, for doing kinds of things that, again, in the old paradigm, in network TV land or syndicated TV seasons, was not going to happen. And I'm just like, yay.
Yeah, it's really good. All right, well, let's move on. The remainder of the stuff we'll talk about, I don't know how much we'll talk because we haven't seen any of it yet, unlike Discovery and the shorts.
Right.
But Star Trek Picard, we're calling it at the moment, whatever that series is going to be called, is expected to launch towards the end of this year. It's set about 20 years after Nemesis. Picard is supposed to be a changed man. And as anyone who reads Twitter knows, over the past week or so,
it's going to pick up
after the destruction of Romulus, which happened in 2387.
Exactly.
When the Hobus star went supernova. And what people forget is that the supernova destroyed Romulus, which then set into motion the events that created the Kelvin timeline. The supernova happened in the prime timeline, not the Kelvin timeline. But that might be a little bit too much factual information for some people to swallow because, of course, as one would expect, social media blew up with hatred of the Kelvin timeline films.
Triggered
and how
by
that, was
that
going to
one
ruin
line, yes.
The Picard series. Okay.
One revolution, one mention of that historical point, blew up that the 20% of the internet again, whether it was automated or not and paid for or not. But so, you're talking to the guy that had to get into this for Stellar Cartography, Chris. And
like, well, right.
There was a sliver, I call it, there was a sliver of Prime. It wasn't just about the Kelvin, the Kelvin having a 5,000 overlays of graphics, 20 years before we saw Pike's Enterprise.
Yeah.
Which I contend now was just they were just on low power mode when they were coming up to Talos. They didn't have everything turned on.
Right.
They didn't have all the screens turned on.
It's like when your phone goes into low battery mode, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. They were kind of running silent because they knew they were gonna be up against something that would soon be death penalty. Premonition there. No, I there was a sliver of Prime at the beginning and I had to incorporate that. Now, the saving grace, and frequent listeners may know that I am not I support the comics. I support the books. A lot of the authors and artists are friends of mine. I will support them. We have such an awesome array of talent. All of that said, I come from a time when the books were uneven in quality and when we had two series at a time and movies going on that it was easy to pollute your brain when you were trying to keep canon straight, right? And I got out of the habit of reading all the time. Now, having said that, the Countdown comics, considering the first Star Trek 09, and I was happy that it was an alternate universe, but I was still grumbling that we were wasting time that we could be telling Prime stories in, which, as it's turned out, is exactly what's happened now. But doing Stellar Cartography, I was so thrilled for the Countdown comic because nowhere in Star Trek 09 do we get anything. And this idea of a supernova wiping out Romulus and threatening the rest of the galaxy, quote unquote, and all of that bit makes no sense.
Right.
But it's all retconned they clean up the mess in Countdown and call it a subspace shockwave supernova.
It's not a supernova the sense of what
it's not
astronomy would think of as a supernova.
Exactly. Yeah. They not only give it a home, a star called Hobus there, but they say it's popping in and out of subspace, which is why it can be like a checkerboard or a hopscotch, not this wave effect that you would, think in a standard way. So, but that seems to be news to a quarter of the internet where it was, whatever you thought about it, it should have been settled 10 years ago or whatever.
Well, the thing is, so for that corner of the internet, if you stop and think for a moment, you don't even need to read the Countdown comics to get this because it is clear from Spock's explanation of the events that Spock is from the Prime timeline and he explains what happened there that brought him here. So that had to happen there. That's how it works. That's why he came here.
Chris,
so you don't really even need that backstory.
Chris, are you sitting there in Japan spouting facts at me again? Are you just trying?
I've got that problem with facts. I got to do something about that.
No, I mean, people can disagree with that as a story tenet, but the fact that that's what was laid out. Now, there was a question at the time. These are Kelvin movies. The nature and the future of what that universe, what that look would like, what politically, financially, canonically would look like. Would 10 years come along and this one movie be kind of like the Doctor Who of the mid-80s for 10 years? It was kind of ignored, later embraced. The Fox Network version. Is this going to be like, if this all blows up and fails, are we going to ignore all this eventually? Well, that's not what's happened. Two or three Kelvin movies came along That became a running bit. And it was embraced, and people know that was, that's what I'm getting at. Even no matter what you thought of the Kelvinverse or the three movies, people embraced the first 10 minutes of being, you know, that that was George Kirk on the Kelvin and with his wife and Prime Universe. They're at Earth when he's born, or they're, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, and his dad survives and yada, yada. But there's a sliver of Prime at the beginning that starts that off in the backstory. And yes, it's the, I was referring to the comics being saving is A, naming the star as, and B, coming up with what's the cockamamie scientific explanation. And STO, Star Trek Online, the game has even gone so far as to say that not only was it not an organic, a normal by the book supernova, obviously, which would affect just near space, but that it was an engineered, you know, terrorist military man-made operation, which makes all kinds of sense too. It was a bomb, basically, mm-hmm. a subspace bomb that was meant to do that. And the fact that Spock, even as he disappeared through, you know, the red matter, blah, 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 and wound up back in creating the timeline of inversion and all that, 30 years, whatever it was in the past. But him trying to get that much, he did save most of the galaxy, most of the local space around there. It's just that Romulus was the biggest casualty, I guess. Remus too, and that's why Nero hates
it. It would be interesting if Remus somehow survived, Larry.
Oh, I would love that. That would be incredible irony. And I think in STO Remus did survive, or they were hoping for that. But anyway, somewhere along the development. But
I'm just picturing how that would happen, given that the shockwave comes through and disintegrates the planet.
I know. Well, you know, but it's a subspace shockwave, so it can do whatever anybody needs it to do, Chris.
It's kind of like a, you know, well, you're from Oklahoma, I'm from Alabama, so we both know this very well. It's kind of like a tornado. It just cuts a path, and one house is destroyed, and the neighboring house is left intact.
Exactly. It pops back up, and goes back in the clouds, comes back down again, and yes. Or it's like a ship that cloaks and then uncloaks and cloaks and uncloaks.
Okay, so let's get on to the actual Picard part.
The actual Picard.
My first reaction, again, when I heard that Patrick Stewart was going to come back and there was going to be a series focused on Picard, was sort of indifference. And I was among the minority, probably, that wasn't just over-the-top ecstatic. I mean, people were just going crazy in social media about
tears,
this.
Like, Chris, there were tears, live and digital. Yes.
There were tears on some of our podcasts about this, actually. And for me, it was like, okay, well, this will be good. I love Patrick Stewart. I love Picard. He's one of my all-time favorite characters. And I'm sure it's going to be interesting, whatever they do. At the same time, The Next Generation happened. The TNG films happened. And for me, that chapter of Star Trek and Picard's story on screen closed. And I don't necessarily need to go back and see Picard brought back to the small screen in this case and have his story continued. They could do something new. I would be happy with that. So it wasn't like, oh, I don't want them to do this. And it also wasn't like I was ecstatic that they're going to do it. It was, okay, well, this will be good. It'll make a lot of fans happy. Let's see what they're going to do. Well, that said, as I think about it more and more, and I hear the news of what's coming out and who's involved, now I'm really curious to see what they're going to do. I personally think that a lot of fans who are so excited about the series,
I know where you're going with
are
this,
going to be very disappointed in what they get, because they think they're going to get, even though Patrick Stewart has said Picard's a changed man and Kurtzman's talked about how it's going to be different as well, people still in their mind, I think, are expecting the Picard they know and love from The Next Generation is going to be back, and they're going to get TNG style stories involving Picard, and I don't think that's what we're going to get.
Your reaction, I was making fun a little bit, not making fun, laughing, but your reaction is exactly what I knew Sir Patrick's actors. Aside from, I've done that, I've been there, it's wonderfully successful, it means a lot to people, but it's done, and what else can we do with that, as an actor would think, as a creative would think. Mm-hmm. I think your mindset was exactly the way his was. And what happened here is what Alex Kurtzman continued to talk about this week in some of these interviewing, but it's exactly why, and he talked about them having meetings with him, because Patrick went in thinking, I'm not going to, and I said, I put it in these words a few months ago, right afterwards, I said, it's not going to be bright, shiny Admiral or Ambassador Picard sitting in a bright, shiny chair with a bright, shiny crew around him on a bridge somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's not what's going to happen. It's got to be different enough to challenge Patrick and this modern crop of writers who I think will all embrace Star Trek and embrace Picard's character, but it has to have a different vibe on it and what that would be. And I would just be very surprised. But that turns out that that's exactly where Patrick is coming from, aside from you yourself. And that's exactly what it had to be for him to want to come back, to find a challenge. It's like, oh, otherwise, why just continue? It got old for a reason. They, four movies and 7 years, they thought they'd told us what they could. Now, 20 years go by. It's literally supposedly 2399. We're about to go into the 25th century. What I was thinking, and again, everything that's come down the pike, no pun intended, seems to verify that, to the point where now this occurred to me as Alex confirmed all this and says it's not necessarily a darker time. I didn't think they would go to involving any next gen people. And if they did, you didn't hear anything leaking out of all these wonderful little Instagram, Twitter photo moments, when they'd all have dinner together, the TNG cast and Marina and Michael Dorn and all of them saying at conventions, we haven't been talked to, on one hand, that's all kind of gone away since the writing has staffed up and supposedly they're going into production in April. Maybe that's been delayed a little bit, but that's what they were publicly saying a few months ago. But I saw Alex this week say that maybe an appearance of a next generation character was not beyond the pale. So maybe the door has been opened on that because the show was being actively evolved all through late fall and summer. But it was interesting that he said, A, they had these meetings with Patrick about doing it or not and their plans and sitting down and sketch. He wanted 4 pages and they gave him 34 over a weekend. But it was over the weekend of the Oscars a year ago. So they were talking to him in January before that announcement. Everything got hammered out deal-wise by August, but they were still very much, hashing out the format. So what's occurred to me and what you said just now, we've gone from people thrilled with a few people. It's almost like everybody who had the doubts are the people who are on board now. And maybe we'll see a backlash of the tearful, sentimentally, bright-eyed next-gen crowd not being happy with what we get.
At least. They'll be tweeting about how this Picard series is crap and it's not Star Trek.
Right. So here's my analogy, and I haven't seen anyone mention this the last couple of days. I'm going to want, and it'll be a series, not a motion picture, but I think we're going to see the Loganization of Picard. You know what I mean? With Wolverine and Hugh Jackman. So we're going to get the serious older story here, a later years, not flashy superhero-y version. Mm-hmm. What Logan was to the Wolverine movies. And people were shocked that a comic book hero could be such a heartfelt human story there, right? That was the and people were so impressed with Hugh Jackman and with the whole concept. Oh my God, a superhero story can be like this and not be 52 minutes of stunt work and action and CGI. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if as a, 13, 14, 15 episode streaming series, that what hashtag Picard show will be kind of a Logan version of the Picard.
Yeah. It could be. And of course, I was just kidding when I said people are going to say it's crap and not Star Trek. Although I do think some people probably will say that.
You don't mean that completely. Yes, you mean some people will say it.
I do think it probably will be something that most fans will see as being very true to Star Trek's ideals, because I think that Patrick Stewart himself holds those so close to his heart that he will steer the writing in that direction.
He's already been there. They've made pains to say that. And yes, I think even in their gut, many, many, many fans will be with him in faith in this series, not having seen it yet, more so than, say, a point-blank startup like Discovery was.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay, so let's move on to another project that we know is coming for sure, which is Star Trek Lower Decks. This is the animated series, a half-hour comedy focusing on crew members other than the senior staff. I saw it mentioned somewhere as like less important crew members, which I think is a little bit insulting to the men and women.
I can't wait to see Cito Jackson back in action. They don't say it's the Enterprise D, do they? Okay.
Obviously, we know where the Lower Decks comes from, the TNG episode of the same name, and just the idea of people who work in the Lower Decks, not up on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this one is very much a wait and see. I don't mind animation. I prefer live action. So I want to see what they're going to do with the animation. As long as the writing is good, it's fine. The comedy angle, I'm not sure about because I don't associate Star Trek with comedy, although there are many wonderful comedic moments in Star Trek.
Well,
and as Matthew and I often say on The Orb, I think a lot of fans don't realize this because they view Deep Space Nine as that series about the war. DS9 is probably the most humorous of all the series. There are little moments here and there. The humor is often very subtle, but there is more humor sprinkled throughout Deep Space Nine compared with, say, The Next Generation.
Bubbly and cloying, yes.
So comedy and humor in Star Trek is something that I think does fit. I'm just not sure we've got Mike McMahon of Rick and Morty doing an animated comedy focusing on Lower Deck characters. I heard that in the original pitch, there was something about the officers that stick yellow cards in so that bananas can come out of the food replicator or something like that. That to me seems awfully silly, but I don't know where they'll actually go with the show.
I have a lot of, okay, two or three things. One thing is anybody, you know, for one thing, Mike McMahon was his before Rick and Morty, he was enough of a big Next Gen fan and wrote the humor book, the Unknown Eighth Season, Warped, I think, the Unknown Eighth Season of Next Generation. Yeah. And the year after the book came out, I remember seeing it go by. He came up to me at San Diego Comic-Con and wanted a picture and wanted me to autograph his book. So that impressed the hell out of me. Maybe he just had me flummoxed. No, you know, in a few years, I'm going to become a big hit producer with Rick and Morty, and then I'm going to get a chance to do the Next Gen or do a Star Trek animated series. So I'm going to impress this Larry guy right now. Maybe not quite so prescient, but that I think his brain and I think his fanboy brain and his heart are all in the right place. And again, Alex in the series of interviews this week said, we want to make, for anybody worried about Star Trek comedy, we want to make sure that this is like the best of Facebook, you know, memes and tropes that fans do and we all laugh at. He says, we want to make sure this series is everyone laughing with Star Trek, not at Star Trek. Like it's in the family and we're all getting the joke, you know, even without hitting it on the head. So that's kind of what I suspected all along.
You don't think there's going to be a character on the show called Larry the View Screen Guy that says, get her done?
No.
My point being, it's not going to be that type of juvenile humor. It's probably going to be more sophisticated.
To me, totally. Well, and look what's happened. My thing is they're aiming for an Adult Swim kind of level here with this.
Yeah, I think so.
Is it too late to transition? We got word this week of something I've been screaming about. Another thing I've been screaming about for at least 10 years when people started griping that there are never action figures at Target and Walmart. You know, we're not doing anything to get the kids. And Star Wars has that whole racket so not only nailed down, but they wrote the textbook on it 30 years ago. And as much as our friends are trying to sell licenses for toys, you got to have a chicken and the egg. You know, there's got to be demand before people buy them.
Yeah. But Larry, look, I know the Toys That Made Us was big, but I have to stop you here before you set off another Twitter firestorm. We're talking about a Star Trek animated series, and you just mentioned Star Wars, and Kurtzman did that the other day, and everybody went crazy. So be careful.
Okay, thank you. And heaven knows what Starfleet Intelligence blog will do to twist my words too. So I better. You're right, Chris. I'd better watch what I say. I think that's wonderful.
Your point being,
But the other revelation here was that in answer to a question, he went out of his way to say if they're going to do an animation show aimed at a kid's level. I mean, the core of Star Trek should be in all of these. And we saw, as much as people talk about the Filmation 1973 era animation style, the concept of what Star Trek could be on Saturday morning, you know, like people said, the animated Star Trek was too good for Saturday morning. It was like
I mean, the stories were real stories. They weren't kid stories.
Yeah, they were Star Trek stories for the most part. I mean, I know the 50-foot tall, whatever it was, 20-foot tall Vulcan still gets me at times. But the other part of this was, it's the first time when Alex said that that's a kind of series that might not necessarily be on All Access. It might be on another network or platform. And that makes sense if you're really trying to get, if you're trying to sow the seeds of franchise and little kids, maybe streaming that parents control is not the way to get it out there.
So just to clarify, because we kind of jumped here, so some people might be a little lost. There are two potential animated projects. Well, there's one certain animated project,
which is Lower Decks. It's been much talked about, Lower Decks.
And there's one potential animated project, which would be aimed at kids. And that's the one you're talking about now.
Right. And the fact that that going back to short treks, Alex said that they're looking at least two short treks in the next gap, however we define a gap now, that would be animated. So maybe those will be tryouts. Maybe those will be, using the short treks format to experiment with different talents and tones and all of that. But yes.
What would you think about a short trek that was shot by fans who are using their action figures to act out scenes as actually being put out by CBS as a short trek?
Well, I think that would be awesome. Or
official action figure story.
It would be amazing. I mean, those things would be so cobbled up. Don't even try to sell, you know, Blu-rays later. Just let that go out and flood the internet. Let everybody cut those up and use them for memes and bits and take over the internet. You know, how Spock broke the internet or something. I don't know. But we're talking, they're really, what's impressed me about all of this, instead of going show to show to show to show, I hate to sound like, you know, I don't know. I hate to sound like I'm, you know, the Oz head here from Star Trek V, but this is the kind of thing, you know, I always talk about Star Trek invented the internet only with stamps and paper. It's kind of that same feeling 20 years ago. I was saying, if only we could do this, 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 and this, but our current paradigm doesn't fit it. Well, now it does. Mm-hmm. And to me, I mean, and the other exciting thing is seeing that Alex gets it. I was impressed that he said they had talked to him about doing a new Trek, and he didn't know exactly what it would be, and he actually put them off for some amount of time. Unlike poor Rick Berman, who always felt like he wanted to have a gap, but always felt the pressure to keep going.
Felt the pressure to keep going,
And apparently, they started developing Discovery before All Access's idea came along. It's like, well, one of the reasons they could hold off and figure out a concept was because they didn't have a platform for it yet, which was interesting to me. But all these ideas, and we haven't talked about, you know, the rumor, never confirmed, the Captain Georgiou Section 31 series.
So yeah, that's the next one on our list here. So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Section 31 is a part of Star Trek that I find very interesting, but I think has to be handled with care so that it still fits within Star Trek's core ideals. So I think some people think that we should stick to Gene Roddenberry's vision very strictly, and the future should always be perfect, and humans should be perfect, and there should be no conflict. But that doesn't make for interesting television or interesting storytelling, and it also isn't how reality works.
I think that ship has sailed, Chris, also.
I think it mostly has, but I still see comments from people who feel that it hasn't, and that Star Trek should never deviate. I think that DS9 handled Section 31 very well because it balanced the goals of Section 31, the actions that they were taking, which went against the ideals of the Federation and Star Trek, but they were doing it because they felt that was the way to preserve the Federation and to preserve those original ideals. And then, of course, Enterprise also picked up Section 31 a little bit.
Well, and look at it this way. In real IRL, production-wise, mm-hmm. who introduced Section 31? DS9. Right. What was it? Fifth season? Sixth season? Sixth season, maybe? What I'm saying, to your point, yes, mm-hmm. you not only got the flow of what DS9 was about, but you had... You know, the five, 6, 7 years of Next Generation. No one was questioning whether these kids can steer Star Trek yeah. in the way it ought to be steered. You know, and so yeah. Section 31 became a textured piece far yeah. into the mix. And then the pickup again with Enterprise was like, oh my God, that was a little radical because it meant, oh, look, this is like predates the Federation.
Yeah, it's been around.
Earth right. creation that, yeah. that survived over, which was kind of the radical point. But I was in a thread talking about this the other day. What is the nature, like, the DS9 depiction, Sloane was really kind of, you know, the devious and Machiavellian and into Bashir's head. And, you know, sexually, my parallel is look at the American CIA. They have been horrible, horrible bad guys. And they have been with Revelations. They've also been, you know, saviors who protected the country against, internal wacky doodleness, right? And mm-hmm. they've stood up to temptations. And Section 31, if we're talking about being around from Archer's time forward, can mm-hmm. have that same kind of bit. And one of the things, I know some people are disappointed that say, oh, it's not representing the best of Gene's, the Roddenberry vision of Trek in the future. But maybe, the whole bit about having black badges and what the hell, who ever heard of secret agents running around with a badge, right?
We're a secret organization, but we have our own badges.
We have our own badges.
Ourselves,
well,
right?
You know, the CIA has its own logo. I mean, my point yeah. here is the one time we saw the black badge in season one of Discovery was on that one guy standing guard at the door the first yeah. time you're aboard, you know, the first 2 minutes you're aboard Discovery. And we never saw it again. And for a long time, I thought that's just going to be one of those evolutionary blips of production that it was tried. And then when they sold it as a merchandise item, I went, oops, there was a, you know, whatever that shouldn't have happened. But now it's been embraced. We saw it in the promos and the trailers. So yes, it's silly on the face, but maybe it's one of those things that they carry around in their, you know, it's the badge they carry around. The one mm-hmm. guy that had it out maybe wasn't under scrutiny or whatever, but for the most part,
he's probably hung over from the night before. He accidentally put that badge on.
Right. He was just hung over. Yeah. But think about talking about the greater canon, DS9, Enterprise, the rest of the mentions on Discovery. We didn't see people wearing Section 31 gear, aside from that one guy who was probably yeah. reprimanded and sent on furlough. And the trailer, we see her in it's in her hand, right? Showing it off. It's an inset close up of a hand with a badge in it. So there might, but the bigger picture here is there might be swings and pendulum swings in Federation history when Section 31 was portrayed more heroically. And then sometimes yeah. when it was totally a dark, ugly secret in the closet. So yeah. again, texture, not trivial. Let's see what they do. But it could be like Mission Impossible. A series of Section 31 could be the wacky doodle, you know, Section 31 team doing things and fouling villains and doing it in creative, crazy ways. Or it could be dirtier than that, much dirtier. And that would be a challenge to live up to the ideal ideals. But
right. And of course, we know that there's a Section 31 in the Kelvin timeline because
right.
we got that in everyone's favorite movie, Star Trek Into Darkness. So it is there. I guess, you know, my point was that in Deep Space Nine in particular, Enterprise just touched on it. You know, there were a couple of moments of Section
right.
31.
It was really a story
Section
point.
31 was actually a very important part
right.
of Deep Space Nine, but it was balanced by everything else going on in the story. When you have a standalone series that's Section 31, and Section 31 drives the entire story, given the nature of television today and this drive for action and for shock value and just, you know, over the top production and sometimes violence, I don't think they'll get into too much violence in a Star Trek series, but there's more violence in Discovery than we've ever had in any
right.
other Star Trek series, which is just a reflection of how television is today.
Although, again, real quick, Alex says that's going to pull back from that because it's not a wartime series, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, yeah. that's good to know. I'm yeah. glad they're going to do that. I just wonder, like, I think this is sort of a delicate focus area for a series, a Section 31. I think it will be very easy to make an interesting TV show that strays too far away from what Star Trek is at its core, unless it's handled carefully. And so I'm going to be interested to see what they do with it. And I'm kind of wait and see.
That can be a dynamic tension. You could have two different characters or two different factions that represent that spectrum of what we've been talking about. And the dynamic tension of the show could be people going over the line and pulling back. And that could vary, you know, not just eight guys and gals running off doing horrible, horrible things secretly with their badges in their pockets. I mean, you know.
Have badge, will travel.
Badge, will Section 31. The thing about DS9 too that just hit me again, and I know you're the big DS9 guy, but every correct me if I'm wrong, but every inclusion of Section 31 as a major story point was always through the lens of Bashir, right? It was always through him as the entree point. Which was interesting because the Bashir major had the checkered past that we didn't know about until five, six years in.
The major stories, but there was other activity carried out by Section 31 in the background, such as infecting the changelings with the virus and such.
Which Bashir affected Odo and all that. But I'm talking about as an active in-your-face part of an episode. It was usually through, and even then, Bashir was the doctor that had to wrestle with the, you know, and did the mind link and all that, and you know, sacrificed himself. But my point is, just as a dramatic, you know.
You can look at it as Bashir is the person who could be blackmailed because of his past.
Right.
You know, he had something he was trying to hide. So Section 31 naturally felt they could probably manipulate him more easily than they could manipulate one of the other officers. And that
compromise may be
the reason that they turned to him. But
yeah.
Anyway, this will be interesting to see. I mean, I guess I'm glad they're going to do one because it's an idea that's been out there for a long time. It's something I've thought about as well. Like, what if we had a series that focused on them? Rumor is that possibly the first episode of season 2 of Discovery could be a sort of backdoor pilot for this series that would then send Georgiou off on the mission that would become Star Trek Section 31. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that happens.
Should it be a backdoor pilot? I mean, the equivalent here to me is Assignment Earth, and we've been talking about Assignment
Earth.
That's
what I was thinking
on the Trek Files. Yeah, but yeah. If Brother, the name of the premiere episode of the season, is going to introduce Pike coming aboard, and I don't, you know, Spock is not part of the first episode, but a big chunk of that hour, if that's really going to be a backdoor pilot, would have to involve Georgiou and her new Section 31 contact. And I don't know if they can sacrifice enough of the hour storytelling to make it really a backdoor pilot, unless they're just going to get a lot of bang for a little bit of time buck there.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think backdoor pilot is probably not the right term because that does imply that the entire story or most of the story would focus on that, but some sort of send-off. There's something in that episode that sends her off, and then they pick it up in the pilot of that series and expand upon it at that point.
Could be.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see what else we have on the list here. We've got three more items. Starfleet Academy. So this was announced, being developed by Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage. I don't know much else about this at this point. I mean, what's happening with this series?
Well, nothing. I mean, I attach what's striking is that this is not rumored. This was in the original, we're extending Kurtzman contract and here's ideas out there. And it was out there with names attached, which always lended a lot of credibility. Yeah. I mean, Picard's show wasn't one of those mentions, and it's come to fruition. So maybe it's just on a back burner. Maybe it's in the mix. Maybe they feel good about it, but it hasn't been a time. I don't know what Stephanie Savage's team has been up to, what they're busy with. It's like watching movie directors have to juggle, speaking of which, juggle projects. They can only do so much at once. There's some structural, maybe just there's been so much Star Trek put forward now that they can only process one new series at a time, and they don't want to create things willy-nilly, which is good. So if they're busy focusing on Discovery and Picard show and Lower Decks, that's two yeah. 1 hours in an animated, and they want to make sure and not crank it out too fast, but they've got the things in the pipeline and they have the intention. And they don't mind letting the world know that. So, you know,
I think that's probably the case. You know. And to be honest, this is, of all the projects that are floating out there, this is the least interesting one to me. You know, Starfleet Academy series is an idea that's been floating around forever.
And made people it always worry gets forever. Pushed,
yeah, well, and it always gets pushed to the back burner or put to rest for a while. I think for a good reason that it would very easily turn into, it's a young adult series, and maybe that's a good thing because you could bring people into the Star Trek sphere through that, and then they become fans. But for those of us who are older, the core fan base as it is now, I think that it's probably one of the least interesting.
Well, okay, the first thing you said wrong was exactly what you just said, for those of us in What's the fan that? Base now, because we need more than just who's in the fan base now. We're all over the hill, Chris.
I always promote.
I know. Look, since Harb Bennett did his Academy script that was turned down, they've been talking about, I mean, you know, it's been dubbed Starfleet 90210 back to the 90210 days, yeah. and there's even been a reboot of that
article titled that in 2000 before Enterprise was announced. When they were talking about, mm-hmm. well, what's the next series going to be? So, yeah.
What's amazing to me is I remember when the hush-hush about what the next series would be that turned out to be Enterprise, there mm-hmm. was a faux focus group done somewhere over in the Inland Empire. I remember seeing a thing on this because then it became a big rumor. But it was basically they were focus testing sci-fi fans, whatever, about the new Star Trek show and whether people enjoyed the idea of an Academy show, a like quote unquote black ops Starfleet show, mm-hmm. which could kind of be Section 31-y or it could be more hands-on yeah. action-y, and a prequel or a history of the founding of the Federation, Romulan War type show. And there was a fourth one that I can't remember right off now.
Well, the Excelsior was talked about a lot at that time.
The Captain Sulu show.
Yeah.
Okay. But I don't even think it was part of that focus group. But what's amazing to me is all of those ideas are in a way in the mix here of all these things they're getting to now.
Yeah.
Kind of
same things keep coming up, right?
They do make sense, but a lot of us held our, you know, aside from, yes, I know we need to expand. We need to not just have little kids buying action figures. We need to have teens who turn around and are spending their money to support the franchise, you know, all that, mm-hmm. all that disposable income that late teens and 20 somethings and college kids and high school kids have to spend. And I hate to sound like I'm being so crassly commercial, but that's part of the engine that drives this. It's always been the worry that it would be soap opera-ish and condescending and, again, 90210-ish. But look at the vibe. I mean, Stephanie Savage and Josh Schwartz, Gone Girl? That's been their wheelhouse. But look, we've got Riverdale is the darker side of Archie, of all things, to make penetrable to a teenage audience that's mm-hmm. being streaming in dark. I mean, there would be ways to adhere to the Starfleet ideals and still, I mean, that's one of the common memes now. I guess what I'm saying is I feel better about doing an Academy show now than I've done, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, because I think it's more out in the bloodline of TV and streaming shows about how to do that.
Yeah, I do think that it's less likely to turn into a 90210 now than if they had done it in 2001.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the tone of a lot of the DC and Marvel superhero shows is, but now there's a million examples to look at, and I'm really impressed by Alex Kurtzman talking about the core Star Trek, you know, whatever tone or even media the show takes, comic, sarcasm, little kids, you know, gritty realism. Somewhere along the way, I hope we'll get back to a straight ahead, shiny, bright Star Trek adventuring show. That would be cool. Yeah. Like after we get these other five iterations, then we come back and have just a straight ahead. Maybe that can be my Captain April show or my mid 24th century show that I want to have, you know, mm-hmm. halfway between Kirk and Picard. But whatever.
Well, with so many shows being produced at the same time, there's certainly room for that, right?
Well, exactly. But I'm saying that would be a case of thinking if people who want the people who love the Orville because they feel like it's next gen ish ness, yeah. that maybe after four or five or six of these other ones are there, it will be time for the mini pendulum to swing back and people to feel comfortable mm-hmm. within the Trek Empire, within Kurtzman's orbit, that there's a reason to put that out there that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just thinking up the wall now.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that one. And then the last thing related to television that we have on the list is the Wrath of Khan miniseries, which was mentioned a while back. Mm-hmm. Nicholas Meyer doing it, a three-part miniseries that focuses on Seti Alpha 5. And the first thing I thought of here was that we've already got this whole story about Khan's time on Seti Alpha 5. It was done as a comic series called Khan Ruling in Hell. And Matthew and John Tenuto and I talked about it on Literary mm-hmm. Treks 19 called A Comic Con in Hell, which we recorded back on May 5th of 2013, if you want to go listen to that. Wait. I remember us doing it. It was so long ago, I had to go look up the date, but that's Literary Treks
19. I'm sorry, was that this century, Chris? Is that what?
I think so. But you know, in Japan, we're about to reset to year one later this year because the emperor is abdicating. And okay. This is Heisei 30. That's the current year. And it's going to go back to one coming up. Actually, this might be Heisei 31 temporarily. And then it's going to be one again. So for me anyway, it will be last era pretty soon.
Well, I would just say that nothing trumps film. And I don't know how many people read or are reminded of this. Although, you know, having you all get this on tape, on audio in 2013, thank God has preserved it for the ages. But I don't know how much of an audience this has reached to the point where people talk. I know a lot of people, they would say, oh, a con. And they're thinking, I don't know. The last thing they're thinking of is like not space battles, but just con on the planet.
Yeah.
Before it blows up and after it blows up. And everyone, I would go, no, to me, that's exactly what it would have been. And obviously, it's,
well, I think that's what this will be.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it is what it'll be.
Is this going to be made or is this sort of in limbo?
A year before this was announced, Nick told me that this was what they were doing and I had to keep my mouth shut about it. That's the one of all of these that I had heard about. And then when that came out, I was like, oh, good, now I can mention this. I didn't know details aside from it would be his time on the planet. I didn't know, mm-hmm. you know, which I can totally see. It could be a non-spaceshipy Star Trek. And that was the first inkling I had of, here's the variety of stories you can tell. It can be like a Lost or it can be a, you know, name it. And it totally, a dystopian kind of thing. And that, you know, somewhere mm-hmm. between Game of Thrones and Walking Dead and Lost, I thought that totally fit in modern storytelling and what audiences in 2018 want and that kind of thing.
It's 2019, Larry.
It is now. Well, you know, we used to say what the 2017 audience wants, and we have to keep updating that criticism, you know.
Yeah, we have to update it once a year, just like the copyright notice at the bottom of the website.
Right. But no, that made a lot of sense. But it's like no one else thinks of that, and when I remind them that that's what it's going to be about, then people go, oh. Because all they can see is like Khan and a bunch of people tromping around in the desert, like the cargo bins of Wrath of Khan. And they're like, well, that's not very exciting. I'm like, are you kidding?
But we can have the Seti Ill farmer, you know, who raises the Seti Ills.
Right. They're so misunderstood.
We could have Seti Ill races.
They're so misunderstood.
Like they paint little numbers on them.
Right.
That's what Quark would
race up the side of your neck. Yeah, I can see that. Okay. No, it would be interesting
first
because
Ill to the ear wins.
You can have. I'm trying to get us out on time here. I know, like now you start. I'm thinking. No, it would start with like right after they've been marooned. And you've got Myrna MacGyver's there, his wife.
Yeah.
And you can have the kids be younger, and I don't know, but...
Well, and that's what the comic is. That's why I'm wondering if it would basically be the same story.
You could see that, yeah.
Yeah.
You can see the whole arc of this, you know, Lord of the Flies among the super brains, you know, what happens to them. And then when the planet explodes and they get shifted and they go from their garden spot to, you know, hellhole and all of that... And then it's almost like the most incredible thing I could see was like the very last frame is his little transmitter or whatever. And it beeps, beeps. And he picks up on the conversation between, and they use stock footage. hopefully there, because it would be so limited. And it just have the whole drama, the, whatever the interpersonal drama that fills up the now apparently three episodes. I was thinking, you know, 10 or 12 or 15, but apparently a three-part hour, whatever the interpersonal drama and man versus God and man versus whoever the tropes are, the last thing, when it's all settled, it's kind of resolved, and then you hear this beep, 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 and you get the audio, or you get a little bit of video of the Kirk Carol Marcus transmission where they're talking about the Genesis device.
I see.
And and then you see Khan slowly turn around and the scowl come back, and whatever they had subtly led up to that moment, and that's where the thing ends. Mm-hmm. And some super comes up and says, you know, and now you know the rest of the story, or what?
Well, that could be interesting, but yeah,
I have the last scene earlier, I'll figure it out.
Not so many people will have read the comic, and getting that stuff on screen will help fill in the blanks. But
only people that do podcasts know about that thing now, 5 years later, comic 5 years later.
But is this going to be made? Well, is this definitely going to be made, or is it just still floating out there?
It may be on the assembly line. I mean, the fact that they put in the very cautious world of relaunching not just Star Trek's franchise, but CBS All Access, and being uber careful, and I can't blame them. But, you know, the promotion, the playbook for controlled leaks, intended teases and leaks, has been very deliberate. And I can't believe that very deliberate sources say, in the same breath as Starfleet Academy and some kind of Picard show at the time and some kind of animated show, I can't believe that it would have been out there if it was not ready. Things can always blow up, but I can't believe there wasn't a lot of caution exercised before they decided to mention it by name. So
things can always blow up, like the Hobus star, right?
Like this, yes. Into a subspace shockwave supernova, Chris.
Okay, well, we'll see if this comes about. Last item to talk about before we close out here, just quickly, the movies, the Kelvin Timeline films. It seems that Star Trek IV is dead at this point because Chris Pine is not on board and Chris Hemsworth is not on board because they had deals and they want to stick to their deals reportedly, but Paramount and Skydance want them to take pay cuts because Beyond didn't do as well at the box office as they had hoped. This is at least what I've heard. This whole movie seems to have undergone so many transitions, so much turmoil and shifts in ideas and people involved.
Oh, come on, Chris. Do you really even care anymore? No.
I actually don't, really. I don't care if they make this movie or not. But where do you think it's going? Do you think they're going to make something? Well, Matthew and I were talking behind the scenes the other day, and we said that, because Matthew really loves the Kelvin Timeline movies.
Can I just say, being very facetious, I know it's been 10 years. The Kelvin Timeline movies, Star Trek 09 and since, were a lot of people's entree to Star Trek and fandom. And as I always say, you always love your first, no matter where, you know, no matter who you wind up marrying, you always remember your first. So yes, all respect to people that are in love with the Kelvins or came to Star Trek that way.
Yeah, I'm not criticizing the Kelvin Timeline. It has its place. I'm just
kind of over
there. With so much new Star Trek content coming out on television and in print.
We're only human.
Whether they make another Kelvin Timeline movie, it doesn't matter to me very much. But what I am curious about, what I was going to say is Matthew and I were talking and we said that you can't make the movie without Kirk. And I said, well, you could make a movie without Kirk, but I don't think it would be very successful. And we agreed that, you got to have Kirk. So if they can't get Chris Pine, they can't make the movie.
Yeah.
And apart from the fact that maybe he wants the original deal that he signed, he's also a very in-demand actor.
Yes.
He's become such a huge star since the 09 movie was made that just getting him there on the set to make the movie and coordinating his schedule with everyone else, because a lot of the other actors in this timeline are also big movie stars, that is difficult by itself. So what do you personally think is going to happen with this fourth Kelvin Timeline film?
Well, you know, a year ago, a year ago, I would thought, oh, this is a delay tactic. It's a bargaining chip and all that. But it has dragged on. There's been now John Cho jumped up just the last couple of days. He was at a LA award show, and talked about it, of course, Online Film Critics Society Awards. Yeah. And said that he's completely on board doing it. He says, maybe I'm an optimist, but I still think this is just not going to go away. Now, it was interesting to me. Now, this is getting fine tuning in semantics, I know, but all the press accounts said that Star Trek IV had been shelved. And then a lot of people leaped to the equation with canceled. And, you know, not that, Tinseltown terminology, ooh, there's a nice one, is an open and shut book, but shelved to me never sounded as firm and definite as, you know, it's out of here, it's gone, it's done. There is a script sitting there. Nobody has, I mean, a lot of people think, oh, Anton Yeltsin has died, we shouldn't do another. I mean, they were obviously going forward. They were talking about just not having Chekhov be a character. So some of the people that are saying, well, I'm glad they're not doing it again. S.J. Clarkson was going to, oh, it's a female director, we're going to have direct this. Well, now she's going to do this Game of Thrones prequel series. That was probably part of what's behind this. But the bottom line is Paramount's bad position is kind of it's on a low ebb now as far as a studio goes. I mean, getting beyond the Star Trek bubble. Position. Yeah, financially. They didn't get the Chinese shareholder stake in. That's really what led to this kind of retraction here. And Pike and Hemsworth were the two biggies in the cast, and they were asking to do that. As actors, I totally get this. If they, you know, forget Star Trek. Look at the big, it's a movie. I'm sorry it's not a series, folks, but it's movie people. I've tried to say this since day one. Why aren't the Star Trek actors going to conventions? Because they're movie people, and that's not what they do until they're, you know, secure in their skin to do it. And Carl Urban eventually did it, you know, the kind of thing. But if they come back on what they'd been promised and take a lower amount, without any more of a personal stake in it. People have done, you know, all kinds of actors have done personal projects that were really important to them, and they've taken, you know, below their normal asking price.
Yeah.
But in this case, in a big budget tentpole movie, if they take less than what they had been dealt with, if they walk it back, then they will forever be known as the two actors that if you really lean on them hard enough for the good of the movie, they will come back down on that. Yeah. And they can't afford to go there. It's just business people. It's a business thing. So, sorry, Pally, it's all about the business.
And we should mention, you said Pine and Hemsworth are the two big actors. And for those who don't know what the story was supposedly about, that might sound strange, but the story had to do with Kirk, with James Kirk and George Kirk. So it had to do with his father. So Hemsworth was very important to the story.
Right. And I don't know if we saw too many leaks down the line, whether it was a temporal rift or mega flashbacks or, you know, an artificial thing or what the hell it was. But yeah, they're interacting. It's a second
chance. Was the Hobus temporal rift.
The Hobus temporal timeline reset that gets everything back into plywood and Christmas lights. Yay.
It was the Hobus paternal rift.
The HPT, HPR.
Yeah.
So I, you know, it might come around. What's interesting is two things. One is what I said all along was the best thing about having is people were trying to trash Discovery and sink it and All Access. It's like, no, folks, this has taken the pressure off the films. Now, I don't care what happens in the Kelvin timeline, not out of selfishness, but knowing human nature and the way the world works. Now, all the mundane audience, the mundane media, and all the bean counters and Hollywood suits who have no clue or stake in Star Trek, when they hear Star Trek, Star Trek's perception won't all hang on what is happening with one movie project. Now Star Trek is back to being a franchise with several productions in development. And that's what we've got now. And that is why, not in a negative way, but that's why there's a little bit of not a yawn, but people aren't frenetic about Star Trek 4. I want everything good with Star Trek to happen. I always said that. I want the franchise to do well. I don't want anything to bomb. You know, not everything can be a number one. Not everything can be the Wrath of Khan, but which I know is an overworn trope too. But But I think that's why we don't, you know, the pressure not being on this movie works in all kinds of ways. And that can be one of them. But the other thing has been this laughable thing the last few days this week on, again, the, you know, clickbait YouTube theater, where where they're trying to take credit for, oh, at last, our boycott of the Kelvin movies has resulted. It's like, no, right. No, it's Paramount.
It only took us 10 years, but finally, you know.
Which is amazing. It's been 10 years since Star Trek 09, but yeah, it's all about Paramount's financial situation. Like, if they had been able to fulfill their original contract deals with Pine and Helmsworth, we wouldn't be talking. Clarkson would be directing this. They would have maybe started it already. But
right.
It's all about the money, and it's not that something retroactively shrunk up. You know, it's not like they had to give the box office money back to people as time went on. That's not what happened. It's all about the financials. And it's just laughable to see, you know, to see them claim that's what happened. And again, the Kelvins, they're enjoyable to me, but I'm so thrilled I don't have to hang, you know, whatever the need was for them in 2006. That's been 13 years ago. I mean, talk about water under the bridge and how much things have changed. The way the world looked, media and Star Trek land looked in 2006, and what the emotion and the vibe and all that was, is completely different now. And these movies are a holdover from that, and that's fine. But our Star Trek world does not depend on them, and that's even better. But, you know, I don't wish anything ill. And who knows what crazy plot, maybe they were going to re-knit the Kelvin universe, you know, and the Prime Line. But what's emerged out of all this, the other thing about having Discovery back is people obviously debate the prime points of Discovery and everything else to come now. But people get it, that the prime is where people's, 52 years of energy and effort and just human nature of emotional attachment. You can't wipe that out. And that's where people's emotions are. They're just human beings. They're just human nature to reconnect to what's already been built and to invent a new universe. If you're not going to flesh it out anymore, people aren't going to be as emotionally attached unless, like I said, like it was their first, you know, or they love that cast, which they do and they should.
It's a good cast. I mean, the Kelvin Timeline cast is an excellent cast.
Oh, yes. But, yeah.
Yeah. Like you say, there's just not enough meat on that bone, as we might say, you know, for you to care that much.
And please keep, you know, if you love them, read the comics, read the novels that are put out in the Kelvin universe, the game now that's out. That's great. But it's not like having it on screen, as, you know, as we say with everything.
Well, the comics are great. And when Matthew and I did Literary Treks together, we went through many of those comics. And then later, when we both moved on and Dan and Bruce took over, and there was a bit of a transition overlapping there, they've continued to do them. So you can go to Literary Treks and hear a discussion of, I think, all of the comics that tied in to the Kelvin Timeline, the ones that were just called Star Trek. And the comics were really good. So even if you don't like the Kelvin Timeline movies, you might really enjoy that story that was told in that timeline through the comics.
You're just trying to use the strength of good comics production to get people to get back in and into enjoying the Kelvin movies. I know you, Chris. It's all a plot. You've got a stake in IDW. Motive. That's what this is. And
is that what it is? I wish I had a stake in IDW. Then I could podcast more instead of running magazines as I do every day to make money. All right. Well, Larry, it's been fun talking about all these future Star Trek projects, but it's not the only thing that's being discussed on the network this week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
I really hope they made an announcement to evacuate the forward part of the saucer section.
Well, he instructed Troy, and so she would, of course, given the command silently.
Yeah, but there was no time. There was no time.
Yeah,
it didn't seem like there was much time.
No, there wasn't.
She did it. Don't even question it.
Be prepared to do it. And like 30 seconds later, they were ramming the thing.
Yep, plenty of time. Okay. Those people serving on board, they know if they say move, you move immediately.
Literary Treks.
I love that it's not just, you know, Keith DeCandido is playing the long game here, and we get these threads woven through all these stories, and it's not just, you know, dumped on you all at once. It's a really nice, slow, methodical way to tell a story, and I'm loving it.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
He's equating survival with winning, but again, because we know the end, he needs to survive and not die in the war so he can get back to the Mirror Universe. And I just love seeing that.
Yeah, it's great, because if you just see this on the surface and don't know the ending, it's true.
Warp 5.
Problem with Section 31 is it is not an official organization. It is extra legal. It does not answer to any authority. It does not answer to any oversight. Officially, it doesn't exist.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us everywhere you get your podcasts if you're an Apple user. Be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone, your iPad, or your Apple TV. Or use the desktop iTunes app, where you can also get podcasts, and you'll get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. We have a master feed, which contains every episode of every show that we do. So if you're only familiar with one or two shows on the network, or three or four, and you want to sample the full spectrum of, I don't know, 20 or so active shows that we have, that's a great way to check those out. And of course, every show also has its own individual feed that you can subscribe to. If you're not an Apple user, you can also get all of that in the various podcast apps. There's Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud. We're also on Windows Phone. We're, I think, still in Google Play Music, although Google is trying to transition everyone to Google Podcasts, which is a different app. And I mention that right now because the question came up a while back in the Babel conference, because there's a lot of confusion between those two. But Google Podcasts is where you would go.
Oh, Google, look. Google, Google.
But yeah, oh, Google, come on. Let's just be clear about things. But anyway, you can also go to the website. Every episode has a show page, and you can download the MP3 file there.
I believe you can even get the Trek files on the Trek FM.
You can, of course. Larry's Trek files are available there in the master feed, and that's also over on the Roddenberry Podcast Network. And you can also get Mission Log from the Roddenberry Network in our master feed as well. So you can get everything everywhere. You can also stream from the website. Anyway, lots of ways for you to get the podcast. We try to make that easy for you. I also mentioned earlier that you can join in the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe, and we would love to hear your thoughts, as would your fellow listeners. And the best place to do that is on Facebook. We have a group called the Babel Conference. That's our listeners group. It's a closed group, so if you're not yet a member, you'll need to click join and answer two questions. Please do answer the questions. That's how we know that you're a listener, because we try to keep that group focused on discussion of what we're talking about on the shows. It's not just a general Facebook Star Trek group, but you can join there. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come up. If it doesn't, just type the whole name, the Babel Conference, and you'll find it. And if you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact, choose to send to a show, and choose the Ready Room to comment on this show, and that email will come right over to me. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM, and on Facebook, our main page is facebook.com/TrekFM. I'd also like to take a moment and thank the associate producers of The Ready Room: Norman C. Lau, Renee Roberts, Zachary Fruling, K. Elizabeth Shaw, Tim Robertson, Sam Piasek, David Shuford, and Ju Kim. Thank you so much, guys, for your support of the show. I don't do The Ready Room as often as I used to, so I want to make sure that you all get credit for all your support over the years of Trek FM and The Ready Room. And if you're interested in becoming an associate producer of this show or any of our other shows, you can do that by supporting the network on Patreon. Everything that we do here is funded by our listeners on Patreon. We're completely listener-supported, and it does take a lot of money to produce, host, and distribute these podcasts. Just visit patreon.com/trekfm to find out how. That's patreon.com/trekfm. You'll get all the details there. We have different levels associate producer is in one of the levels. We also have the Patrons Roundtable that you can take part in. We have Patron Zone, which is a special website. And there are various amounts that you can contribute. And anything that you can do really helps us out a great deal. So I hope you'll check it out at patreon.com/trekafilm and become a supporter of the network. So, Larry, as we always do here on The Ready Room, we find out what you have going on because you're always very, very busy. Of course, con season, I guess, has cooled down a bit, right? But what do you have coming up, and also with Portal 47?
Well, yes, Chris. Thank you. And I am so excited because I've got some new things coming. I know, duck. No, I'm really excited to build out. I've kind of soft launched our Trekland Treks, which are concierge day tour film site tours around Los Angeles, like one day doses when you're on vacation in LA, or you're on a business trip and you've got a spare day and you want to go to some Star Trek filming sites, common or obscure, with me as your guest. I've got you covered. Just go to treklandtreks.com and it's there. But I'm really excited, as kind of a sampler, kind of an introduction to that, I'm starting an event called, and I'll do this, you know, more than once through the year, but the first one is going to be President's Day weekend, February 16th and 17th, calling it LA Away Days. And you can go to my website, larrynemechek.com/away, or go to treklandtreks.com and follow the link and find out all about it. It's like almost half the price of the treks, but I have a schedule on Saturday and or Sunday. It's President's Day weekend, and I know it's short notice, but if you can check that out, maybe if you didn't get to go, especially if you didn't get to go on the cruise, or you know, Vegas is in the cards, maybe this is something that you can people would find of interest, because It's the sites, and I will share history with folks. And if we have a good group is great. And we have lunch, and it's a cool thing. But again, LarryNemechek.com is the center of all of that.
Now, you chose that day in honor of Thomas Vanderbilt, the first president of the United Federation of Planets, right?
Yes, I did. I completely did. Oh, President's Day. I was like, where did you pull this out of? Yes. Yes. Which I have to say, if anybody saw that page from the Picard scrapbook that I did for Generations, thank you, Penny, the late great Penny Jude, for letting me do that. All the ambassadors' names are corruptions of my corruptions. They're redos of my parents and kids and wife's names. So Thomas Vanderbilt was my dad's first two names, by the way. So yeah. Anyway, that's great. Yes, Portal 47 is going. We just started a new year there. I picked up a ton of people around the world. If anybody's interested, come over and read portal47.net. It's our mini con all year long. If you enjoy deep diving, like I barely get into here with you, and I do it on my weekly Trekland Tuesdays live on my Facebook page every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, which is archived later also. But if you want to do that all the time and with voices that have not been heard from Star Trek that worked on the shows, which is kind of what I aim to do, preserving and exposing a lot of Star Trek. Like I say, it's Star Trek for people who have no idea how much Star Trek they have no idea about. I invite you to take a look at Portal 47. And somewhere in there, we are bearing down really hard to work on get started finally editing on The Con of Wrath, just as a little update there. So yeah, things are hopping in Trekland, Chris. And before that, if anybody's coming lucky enough to get a ticket to Gallifrey 1 here in LA, the Doctor Who convention, which overlaps things, I'll be there on Friday, I guess the 15th of February there. So other things coming up in the year, maybe next time we talk, I'll be able to talk about more. But of course, Trek Vegas and Comic-Con San Diego are in the mix, and a lot more this year. So it's going to be another amazing year with so much new, amazing Star Trek to talk about.
Great. Well, looking forward to it. You're staying busy even when there are no major cons happening in the coming weeks. And of course, if people want to keep up with what you're doing on a daily basis on Twitter, your handle is very easy, Larry Nemechek.
Hope you can remember that.
People
right.
can find it there.
Larry Nemechek's Trekland is the main Facebook page, and my Instagram also.
Great. And if you want to find me, I am not podcasting very much these days, unfortunately, because of my work. I am hoping to get back into it more. That is one of the things that I hope to change in 2019. But There are a few pieces that need to fall into place for it to become a regular thing again. But if you want to catch me here on the network, you can always go back to past episodes of The Orb, our Deep Space Nine podcast, which I host with Matthew Rushing. And Matthew and I are talking about doing some new episodes soon, so hopefully we'll have those out for you. And of course, here on The Ready Room, we've got, I don't know, we're closing in on 8 years, I think, of back episodes of this show. And you can find my writing about Star Trek on the official website at StarTrek.com. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, my username is C, Brian Jones, the letter C, and Brian with a Y. And I'm making my way through my DS9 rewatch right now. It gets interrupted sometimes, but a lot of days recently, I'm doing a lot of tweeting as I go through those episodes. So if you're interested in following that, or just my general comments about Star Trek, you can find those there. C, Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. And that's my username pretty much everywhere in social media. Well, Larry, I'm glad we had a chance to get together on mic with all this news coming out about new Star Trek content and at least share our thoughts on it with everyone.
Yeah, it felt so overdue, but it is. When we have a week like this, it's great. My first instinct is to hop, even with everything else going on, my first instinct is to hop on mic with you, Chris. So I'm glad we had a chance.
Yeah, we do talk about that behind the scenes. We're like, can we jump on mic? And I usually say, unfortunately, I can't be home, so I can't get on mic. But
the other side, sooner or later, other side of the room is shrinking these days. So yeah, so I'm glad we had this chance.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but you know, Chris, it's time to stick a newly restored 2258 Klingon hairpin in it, because the Ready Room is done.